to one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio. We are live across the airwaves of Rant EM Radio, rantemradio.com. Tune in Radio Stitcher, iTunes, you know the drill by now. My goodness, Saturday afternoon, April 7th. We're in the middle of our WrestleMania marathon, folks. That's right. And we are live. L-I-V-E, live. 5 o'clock on the East Coast. 3 p.m. if you're out there in Two p.m. if you're out on the West Coast. 3 p.m. if you're somewhere in Colorado. And if you're in Nolens, like Nick German, it's, four o'clock and change, something like that. But Double A being joined by Mr. Impact Player himself, Philip J. Yep. Rea. I'm going to convince him that his middle initial is J. So he says it's G, you know, for gorgeous, for George, for Georgie, for Jeffrey.
It's actually Gregory, but that's
Gregory,
fine.
You know, Jorge.
Yeah, something like that.
That's with a J, by the way. Hey, why not just change it to George and make your life easy? Because we can call you George, and it could be interchangeable with a G or a J. And whenever you go to the Spanish, areas of New York City, you'll be Jorge.
That's great.
Felipe Jorge.
Felipe Jorge. Sounds like a cook that Jack Tripper had in his restaurant.
Oh, man. Well, anyways, it is a roundtable today. We are live. Thank God I was able to get these things working. Now, let's see if we can be heard on the air. That's the next thing. Because I did test the air, the feed earlier, and I could be heard. And, of course, there's a commercial playing. Sure. Why not? 7-Up? Where's my residuals for this ad? Anyways, or not 7-Up, 7-Eleven. Oh, man, I am just giddy because today we're going to talk about the forgotten stars of pro wrestling. And the gist of that means great hands in the ring, great personalities, great characters that necessarily always get forgotten. Well, I can be heard. I'm sure Phil can be heard. Yeah, well, okay. I think Phil can be heard. So if I see that Phil is not being heard on the feed, I'll do something about it. But anyways, we might be joined by Tony C. We might be joined by Surfer. I text these fools a short time ago to make sure they were not. They stayed up last night. They told me they were not staying up for the post show. They stayed up last night. I think they overdid it. And now they're napping because that let me tell you something. That Hall of Fame went on way too long last night, and we didn't get off the air till 1 o'clock in the morning. So so who knows what they're doing? But it's myself and Phil for the time being, and the lines are open 954-889-7268. Double A the Rant, all one word on Skype. If you want to be a part of the conversation, the chat room is open, rantemradio.com. And if you're listening on TuneIn and all those devices and things like that, for God's sakes, stick with us all weekend long. And, of course, tonight it continues because when we're done with this program, we'll be off the air 90 minutes, hour, 2 hours, somewhere in that ballpark. If the conversation gets hot enough, who knows. But at 8 o'clock, the Midnight Jury will be live. Our good buddy Mike Norenganger. Did I say it correct? Yeah, okay.
Correct.
He'll be on the air. He'll be talking all things WrestleMania, predictions, best moments, worst moments, favorite moments, memories, all those things. He's going to be on the air 8 o'clock tonight, and I believe they are going to be getting a live report from NXT TakeOver. I believe. Ooh. I'm not sure, but they may be getting a live report. Very uncharacteristic for the Midnight Jury, since they don't talk wrestling too often. But this is going to be interesting.
No, not recently. No, not recently. They switched up a little bit because they're not really too fond of the current product. But Mike and Adam are definitely throwbacks at heart. They covered a ton of wrestling during their first couple of years of the show. So
yeah, so you may be getting a live report of what's going on there at the Smoothie King Center.
Yeah.
You know, in New Orleans. Terrible name. You know, some of these arena names are just, can't we just call them generic names? Like, there's certain arenas that are branded that I don't have an issue with the branding, like the Phillips Arena in Atlanta, Georgia. That's fine. Made after the light bulb. The people that make the light bulbs. That's fine. Give me another MetLife Stadium just doesn't roll off the tongue.
Yeah, man. It's a sign of the times, though, boss. You know, everybody's got a sponsor now. You have to pay the bills, pay the rent.
The Mercedes-Benz Superdome. It's the goddamn Superdome.
Yeah, anyways. I know. It happens.
Anyway, so they're going to...
Baseball's the same way, man. Citizens Bank Park, you know, AT&T Park, Citi Field. My home field is named after a fucking bank, man. So I understand. I totally get it.
You see, it should have just kept the name of Shea Stadium. That's it. That's it. Yankee Stadium got to be the new Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, because the Yankees have, they're also worth, you know, $5 billion, not million, $5 billion. So they have enough revenue to name a stadium anything they want. They don't need sponsors. They're the winningest sports franchise in sports, actually.
They had to go with Citibank, though. They couldn't go with another banking giant. Like
Chase. Well, no, because Arizona has Chase Field.
Yeah, but there's a handful of Pepsi centers.
The only Pepsi center is in Denver, right?
There's one in Pepsi Albany.
Where?
In Albany.
Oh yeah.
There's the American Airlines Arena in Miami, and then there's the American Airlines Center in Dallas.
That's right. Correct. So, aren't they based out of Dallas?
American Airlines. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
They are, but they have a major
hub
in Miami.
It's sign of the times, man. Sign of the times.
You know what? In New York, it's always going to be the Garden. The day the Madison Square Garden gets torn down, you know, if they ever brand it as something else, I think people are going to set fire to the city of New York.
Yeah, Midtown will be on fire for a couple days.
and you won't even have a garden. After the people get done with it. But it just doesn't roll off the tongue. These WrestleMania at the Mercedes-Benz, WrestleMania at MetLife Stadium, WrestleMania at whatever the next year it's going to be, it'll probably be the new LA Sports Stadium, whatever the hell that's going to be called. You know?
I still call the Calgary Flames playing the Saddle Dome. I don't even know what it's called now, but I still call it the Saddle Dome. You know, it's called Saddle Dome. That's what I used to. You know, it's same with Boston Garden. I call it the Boston Garden, but it's called something. Philly had the Spectrum. Now it's what is it called now?
It's the Wells Fargo.
Wells Fargo.
I could pass with that because it's not a long ponderous name, you know. But Smoothie King Center.
Yeah, because they probably were the highest bidder, man. That's why Mercedes has the Superdome. At least they kept the Superdome name. They just added a sponsor to it. So I know, you know what I'm saying? Although it doesn't resonate with all of us, it still has the Superdome. It's still the dome, you know?
Give it a couple of months. We're going to be on the air. Well, this Tuesday night, SmackDown will be live from the P.F. Chang Center in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Anyways.
Well, the Red Wings just got the Little Caesars Arena, the Joe Louis Arena. They tore it down.
That doesn't sound right.
Little Caesars is the highest bidder, or they're probably from Michigan. I don't even know.
Let's go to somebody who's probably very very opinionated with this. Tony C.
Here I am.
So
my apologies.
We're taking umbrage with the name Smoothie King Arena or Smoothie King Center, whatever it's called, because you know that's where the festivities will be taking place over the course of the weekend, with the exception of WrestleMania. You're from Orlando. You have the Amway Center, which replaced the Amway Arena,
which replaced the TD Waterhouse Center.
You know, it's just, let's just keep it simple. It was the goddamn Orlando Arena.
And yeah. Sorry.
All right. Well, anyways, we're not here to talk about arenas and their
great
crappy
names like Thomas the Mac.
I know you love that one, but you know,
that's where UNLV plays, right?
No.
Yep.
I think they play. They used to. They play somewhere else now. Vegas has what, 7 or 8 arenas?
T-Mobile Arena now.
That's that brand new gimmick, man. That's the one that Choppy went to pay Money in the Bank a couple of years ago for his honeymoon over there.
In Vegas.
Oh man. Well, let's talk about the Forgotten Stars of pro wrestling, but real quick, back to what you're going to hear tonight. Midnight Jury, 8 p.m., Mike Norenganger. He'll talk wrestling. He'll talk WrestleMania. May get an NXT TakeOver report from the Smoothie King Center. And then tomorrow, you'll get a rebroadcast of the Shining Wizards at 8 o'clock in the morning. 11 a.m., the live programming starts with the return of the Wrestling Call-In Show with William Morgan. And from what I understand, you're going to hear a lot of old voices. So you kick off your morning tomorrow with the Wrestling Call-In Show. That'll take you right up to 1:30 in the afternoon. Phil, Choppy, and probably a cast of characters chomping at the bit will bring you turnbuckle throwbacks.
Yeah, we hope to get some live feeds from New Orleans as well.
Okay.
White Lightning will be there.
White Lightning will be here. I don't know if he'll be on the air though, but he will be here for the maybe he'll jump on with you guys for the pre-show.
He'll be there for the festivities.
He'll be here for the festivities. We're not going to have as many people as we do normally. It's a couple of guys short this year. Everybody had some stuff going on. It's still the holidays. Some people celebrate Greek Easter and some other stuff going on, so yeah. So it's going to be happening now.
Some people celebrate WrestleMania with Chinese food.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
You know, anyways, it's easy when it's just downstairs. Yes, I said that. Anyways.
You did.
You've been on a roll. You've been on a roll the last, like, 8 days, man.
Yeah.
I got to tell you.
Don't bother dialing. The boss is off the hook.
I gotta tell you. After I started playing those Freaks and Effing Geeks clips the other day, and by the way, thanks to the messenger who I guess keeps better records than I do, a little birdie gave me the episode number of Surfer's Infamous Drop, so now I can go back and grab that.
Can we look forward to that Tuesday or tomorrow?
Maybe. Maybe.
And you know what? I was searching so hard.
You know what? The hell? I'll just tell you what it is. I'll give you 1 second. I'll tell you what the episode number is. It's, where's that message? It's, oh, come on. Where's the message? There it is. It's the episode from March 15th, 2016, which I don't know what number that is, but that's the date. That's the date on it.
I knew it. I knew it was in February or March. I knew it.
So, wait, is it the drop when
he first did it?
Where the homophobic drop.
When he called the hotel?
No, that's the drop. When he wanted, when we tried to convince him to call some more gay people.
When he wanted to call the Walmart.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
His meltdown, his homophobic meltdown.
That if AA plays on his airways, I swear we're going to get a letter. It's going to be a protest.
I know, especially now. But
in this climate.
But Turnbuckle Throwbacks, 1 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, they'll be live. They'll give you, they'll talk a little bit of news, They'll give their predictions, but most importantly, they're going to be taking a trip back in time to 1988 and WrestleMania 4, 30th anniversary, and the tournament to crown a new World Wrestling Federation champion. Then at 4 o'clock, the rant will be live on the air. We'll take you right up to bell time or as close as possible because we do want to let everybody get settled in, get their food, and get things like that all taken care of. We're going to probably do a little bit of coverage of the kickoff matches, not too much, depending on what airs and what doesn't air. The second hour of the kickoff is going to air live on the USA Network. But we'll be on the air at least 2 hours, and we're going to run down the card, give our predictions. We'll give an update on all the latest news going on, going into the showcase of the Immortals. And let me tell you something, there's a lot of news going around. And let me tell you something, I'm going to take umbrage with Chris Caruso, right? Or not Chris Caruso, Chris Cruz, because he had some unsavory things to say about Ronda Rousey. And we'll talk about those things tomorrow. Then, of course, our WrestleMania post-show at the conclusion of the event. Usually, you know, there was a time many years ago that we used to tell you, we'll be back on the air at 11 o'clock tonight. Can't do that in 2018, apparently. So we'll be back on the air at the conclusion of WrestleMania, and we'll recap everything that went down. And if you missed any part of the marathon, including last night's Hall of Fame post-show, you can listen to the entire marathon rebroadcasted beginning Monday morning at 6 a.m., and it will run the entire day. Okay, let's talk about the forgotten stars of pro wrestling. Now, the reason why we're going to talk about this today, because I started thinking, we've done so many roundtables, we've done gimmicks, we've done best WrestleManias, we did one of the best roundtables we ever did was a WCW roundtable, we've done the Monday Night Wars, we've done best matches, we've done... They say we've done Wrestling Cities. I don't remember doing Wrestling Cities, but okay. We've done promos. We've done everything. But we've never talked about the forgotten stars of wrestling. And there's so many forgotten stars of wrestling. For example, I'm going to start right off the bat with a guy that gets a lot of heat, but he was a star in this industry.
Industry.
Terry Taylor.
A.K.A.
The Red Rooster.
A.K.A.
Terrence Taylor, the tailor-made man. Now, here's a guy from Vero Beach, Florida. Broke into the industry. He broke in Florida. He broke in with Championship Wrestling from Florida. He meandered the territories, had a stop in Georgia, had a stop in Mid-South, had a short, quick run in the Carolinas, and then he went back to Mid-South, had a semi-decent run in Mid-South, and when Mid-South was eaten up by Jim Crockett Promotions, then he became a fixture in WCW. He also had 5 minutes in the WWE as the Red Rooster. And here's something that I don't know if a lot of people know. But, according to Michael Hayes, Terry Taylor and Kurt Hennig came into the WWE at the same time. And that the original idea for Mr. Perfect was pitched for Terry Taylor. Now, let me ask you something. I'm going to ask both of you. Let me start with Phil, because I think Phil is... He expresses himself very eloquently. Could you have bought?
Oh, and I don't.
You do, but Phil has a. It's that New York thing, you know. New Yorkers have a way to put icing on the cake.
Ain't that a bitch? Go ahead.
So, Phil, what would you think if you saw Terry Taylor as Mr. Perfect?
If I knew then what I know about Terry Taylor now, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But because I didn't do anything tape trading wise till like high school, you know what I'm saying? I would be, because I didn't know. But knowing what I know now of Terry Taylor, who was well rounded, super accomplished, and like between mid-Atlantic and mid-South and NWA. Like, he's a great wrestler.
Yes, he is.
You know? I would be like, eh. But Perfect was... I think Perfect had to have more personality than Terry Taylor, though. You know?
He does, because Mr. Perfect came in and was already the AWA World Champion for a year.
Yeah.
And had, you know, matches with Nick Bockwinkel and Jerry Lawler and all these things. Terry Taylor, I think his biggest claim to fame at that time was he was the Universal Wrestling Federation Television Champion.
Right.
That wasn't the world title, but it was.
No,
it was,
but that was Herb Abrams UWF, right? That wasn't
Bill
Watts.
No, this is Bill Watts. This is the Bill Watts version. And he may have been the North American champion also, before it became UWF.
That belt was huge.
Huge ass belt. But that part I have to go back and look. But okay, he had his little run there in the UWF, then he went to Jim Crockett Promotions after they bought out the UWF. I guess he had a falling out with the Crocketts and then went up to Vince. And that's where we got to know him as the Red Rooster. When that failed and blew up in his face, he came back to WCW. And that's where Tony C got to know him as the tailor-made man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's Alexandria, York.
That's right. It was great to... I mean, that's the Terry Taylor I know. The tailor-made man era. When he was Terrence Taylor and the York Foundation, and they recruited Richard Morton and Thomas Rich, and Tommy Rich is on this list, by the way. But
we had this conversation before about the York Foundation. I don't know if it was on this show. I know Lee was involved in it. Tony C, a bunch of people were all talking, and we all agreed that we talked about this a few times, that every one of those guys in that crew could work, like, legit.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And even though, like, Tommy Rich was on the cusp of, like, being old, old for that time.
Don't do wildfire like that.
No, I'm not, because he actually worked a little more in ECW after that.
Yes, he did.
He's
still working.
So, I think, again, it's just a matter of knowing what you know now. If you knew now what you knew back then, you would probably appreciate these guys a little more. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's so... I don't know how I would feel about him being Mr. Perfect. However, if I knew then what I knew now, he's an awesome Mr. Perfect because he could work.
But the only thing is I remember that Terry Taylor... I don't remember Terry Taylor ever cutting a decent promo. I don't remember.
He never had the opportunity.
Yeah, you're right about that. But, I like Terry Taylor, but I don't know if I could have bought into him being Mr. Perfect. But, and of course, I said Terry's biggest claim to fame was probably being the UWF television champion. But really, Terry's biggest claim to fame has been becoming one of the biggest stooges in wrestling. So yep. that's known worldwide, but. Go ahead, Tony. What were you going to say?
I just want to know how the hell they get Terrence from Terry. They're two different damn names.
Let me see. Is Hulk Hogan called Terrence? Is that his official name?
I think he's Terry Hogan.
Terry Bollea.
Yeah, Terry Bollea.
I'm assuming that this is correct, but it is Wikipedia.
So his name is Terrence Hogan?
No.
Terrence
Bollea.
No, but listen. His official name, okay? I have to assume that this is correct, but I don't know. I'd have to see Hogan's driver's license. This says his name is Terrence Eugene Bollea. Now, the Eugene part is not what's funny. It's how it's spelled. Eugene. So, Tony, that's your favorite wrestler. What do you think about old
Eugene? Say that name was?
Eugene.
So his real name is Terry Eugene Bollea?
Yes, but it's Eugene. Not E-U-G-E-N-E. It's Eugene.
Well, you know, see, I'm glad. I don't know. I'm glad that I have a name, and Tony C can attest to this too, because we both have names that, if somebody calls us by our government name, our full name, our full first name, we're in trouble.
Exactly.
No one calls Tony C Anthony. And the only one that's calling me Philip is my mom, and that's when I messed up.
There you go, or the government.
Or the government's coming for me, the tax season.
Yeah.
Exactly. you definitely right about that. But I'm saying, in the hood, Terrence don't equal Terry. I never known somebody be named Terry, nicknamed Terry. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know, I had a dude around my way growing up. His name was Terry, and he had a glass eye, and he used to pull it out and scare the kids with it. But we never knew him as Terrence. We just called him Terry.
Yeah, Terry Crews is Terry Crews.
Yeah.
About Ricky? Where did they get Richard from Ricky from?
Well, they made those names all official, like Michael Wall Street, Terrence Taylor, you know what I'm saying? Like they wanted to make them sound efficient, like official, like, you know.
Saying, okay, Thomas comes from Tom. You can get Thomas from Thomas, how they did Tom Richard's name. But ain't nowhere in the head you get Richard from Ricky. You know what I'm saying? Brenda Taylor ain't name her son Ricky, short for Richard. You know what I'm saying? Dick is short for Richard. His name should have been Dick Morton.
Dick Morton?
Not Secret. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying. Not
Tony,
his name was Richard Morton.
Tony, something tells me that the gimmick would not have been as effective if he would have been known as Dick
Morton.
Sound like a
wrestler from the 50s.
You
know. Good, so now coming to the ring, Dick Morton.
Dick Morton to face.
On the York Foundation, I'm just saying. Because it was Tommy Rich, switched from Tommy Rich to Thomas. Okay, that's cool. We get with that. But Terry and Ricky the Richard. No. Come on, who's doing the book then? That Double A's boy who didn't want nobody to throw over talk bro. What's his name?
Yep. Nah, that wasn't Bill Watts, was he?
That was the Jim Hurd era.
That was Jim okay, that was I'm Pizza sorry, Guy.
I knew yeah.
Jim Hurd,
that was Pizza Guy era.
But, you see, here's the thing. When he was trying to get Ric Flair to change up his gimmick, and they made him cut his hair and put an earring
cut
in.
His hair.
Stand by for a second, Double A.
They would have made him Richard Flair, you know.
Yeah, but Terry Taylor, man, I'm actually glad he's in the spot that he's in. I just he was a great wrestler, just didn't get any opportunities.
No, but I will say this: behind the scenes, he jumped from one promotion to the next. I think he's the only man during the Attitude Era to have gone between WCW and the WWE five times.
Well, they brought him back for reasons. I mean, he's a smart dude. Like he's had almost every job back there. He was a road agent. Didn't he write at one point?
I think he did.
Yeah, I mean, he did everything except for referee, I think, you know?
He's currently employed by the WWE, and he's a producer for the WWE. But, well, you know, I grew up with the Tailor-Made Man. I guess, Tony C., that's why they changed it to the Tailor-Made Man. Which, by the way, if you take Terry Eugene Bollea, his initials spelled Tub. I just thought I'd say that. But,
Tub.
You know what? We're gonna do a little do some research on the Terrys of wrestling. I got another Terry in wrestling. Let me see here. Let me see if his name is Terrence. No. Magnum T.A. His name is just Terry Allen.
Terry Allen, of course. That's where T.A. is from.
Yo, I know, but his name's not Terrence.
No, it's Terry.
What show came first? Magnum P.I. or...
Magnum P.I. came first.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
So that's where they got the name Magnum T.A. from. But
really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yes. I thought Magnum T.A. was first.
No.
That's why he had that damn Tom Selleck mustache.
Damn right. Yeah, all the girls went ooh and ah for that dude, man. There was one picture of him in PWI where he's like laying across a motorcycle.
Yeah.
You guys ever see that picture? It's pretty famous, actually.
Yes, I have.
And he's got like a do-rag on his neck and a leather jacket, and he's laying across the friggin' motorcycle.
Same fat bras that have been following the horsemen for the last 40 years.
Man, another sad wrestling career.
And do you know who's...
I do not wear blue jeans.
Do you know who christened him Magnum T.A.? I'm just reading this right now. This is very shocking.
Was it Flair?
Who?
Andre the Giant.
That's not surprising.
Andre christened him Magnum T.A. I guess Magnum was a fan of Magnum P.I.
Probably told me look like Tom Selleck.
By the way, don't forget, the Andre the Giant documentary this Tuesday night, 10 p.m. on HBO.
Cannot wait.
So anyways, on to the next one that I have here. I put in the picture that I posted when I was promoing this program a couple days ago, there were three wrestlers that I put on there. Terry Taylor was one of them. The second one, and Lee came out, I don't know if Lee didn't see the picture clearly or Lee was just busting my balls, but Lee thought I guess it was Al Perez. No. First of all, Al Perez's claim to fame is that he was the Black Scorpion for about 10 minutes. That's about it.
Listen, he was in that U.S. title tournament they had. He was, and when Gary Hart had him, that's just the guy who got lost in the shuffle. He's a phenomenal talent.
I know he's a good hand in the ring, but, Al Perez never did anything that I would say.
Well, not in NWA, but definitely world class. I think he was champion of world class.
He was.
I think, yeah.
He was. But the person that was in the middle of the picture was Brad Armstrong.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
The Candyman.
The Candyman. The goddamn Candyman. Brad
Arachnaman.
Arachnaman and Bad Street and a handful of others.
That's right. He was Bad Street. He had the mask. I forgot about that.
Right.
Yes.
He's a few others forgotten characters.
He was a Freebird.
Yeah, he was. And...
Honorary Freebird.
But...
Yeah, but I'm sorry to cut you off, Double A, but calling him a Freebird... It's like calling Jeff Jarrett a horseman. You
well,
know?
Wait a minute. Jeff called himself.
He said it last night, damn it.
He called himself a horseman last night.
And I cringed.
He said he was a member of the Horsemen and the NWO.
And the Bullet Club, but he couldn't name them.
And the Bullet Club. What?
Yep.
He should have just said the club and that's it. Well, he did say a certain club.
Yeah.
So
he's talking about the Kiss My Ass Club.
But he could have talked about all the 5 million factions that were in TNA,
Yeah.
But Brad Armstrong,
Southern boy,
second generation star, one of 5 million Armstrong brothers. There's Brad, Scott, Steve, Brian.
Man, Scott Armstrong. Four. Rant EM radio music.
Oh, the stinger that we used for such a long time. Hey, that was that's a great stinger. It's a great ID. You know, that was our original network ID that we had. Hold on. You see, now I got to play it, Tony. See, why'd you open your mouth?
You're nostalgic.
I'm Wait a minute. Yeah, but, whenever you heard this, you knew an Armstrong was coming to the ring.
Need some damn mid-card action. We're getting ready to start.
Exactly. But Armstrong was Brad specifically, because there was, you know, you talked about Steve. Steve was part of the Southern Boys with Tracy Smothers. And Scott's claim to fame is he eventually became a referee in WWE and became the corrupted referee for the Authority. But Brian, and of course Brian, we know what Brian ended up doing. But Brad, though, was, first of all, I think probably the best wrestler of the four of them, okay? Was definitely my favorite.
Isn't the Roadie Armstrong?
What was that?
Is it the Roadie Armstrong?
He's the youngest. He's the youngest of the troop.
Oh, okay. Damn, I thought I was losing my wrestling.
Your wrestling perspicacity?
Yeah, I thought my wrestling dementia was kicking in.
Oh, man. You gotta lay off those painkillers, Tony C. God, I gotta take it easy.
Listen, that I'm saying, I ain't as sharp as I used to be.
I know. we gotta work on that. But anyways, Brad was such a good hand in the ring. I just watched probably about a week ago his matches that he had with Brian Pillman for the light heavyweight championship, which were great matches. And then of course he came into the WWE in 2003 or 4. To be a color commentator, and I thought, hey, they're giving him something to do. This is going to be good. I always liked Brad. I don't know what happened. It didn't last that long. And then, unfortunately, Brad untimely passed away due to a heart condition or something. It was something heart-related. And
too much of them chemicals seeped into his skin with that mullet. You had to keep that mullet fresh.
Maybe that's
the late 80s.
But if you are a member of if you grew up watching the territories, there was only a handful of people that were hotter than Brett Armstrong in terms of wrestling.
Yeah, the problem that Brett Armstrong had was that there wasn't enough guys in his weight class.
No,
like you really never considered him a heavyweight. So
because he was by the top cusp of the light heavyweights.
Correct. So by the time he started wrestling Pillman and Liger and all those other guys that came through WCW right before the boom, there was no division. If he would have been in the Attitude Era, he would have been opening the card against Ultimo Dragon and Malenko and Jericho and Hoovy and Ray Ray and all those guys. Like, he would have been that dude. He would have been that dude. He would have been a champion. He would have been definitely a cruiserweight champion. Even in WWE, he would have been a cruiserweight champion against Taka Michinoku and, you know, what's his nuts? Lawler's son, you know, Aguilar and all those other guys. Yeah, Brian Christopher. Thank you, Tony C. Aguilar and Super Crazy and all those other dudes. You know, it's sad that he was in the right guy in the wrong era, you know? But in the territories, he was hot because he would hop from spot to spot and win whatever title they had, like whether it be a TB title or a light heavyweight title. But it just didn't resonate. There wasn't enough guys in his weight class to make such a spark in wherever he was. So
and he can go, too.
He can legit go. Love Brad Armstrong. Yeah.
And the other person in that picture, that trio of pictures, kind of a little, maybe should not be discussed in this program because he was a massive star, but he was a massive star in such a short period of time, because when his run ended, he didn't get utilized, and that was Bobby Eaton. Mm-hmm. Bobby was a massive star. For those of you
I didn't, you cut off doubly. What was it?
No,
Bobby who?
Bobby from the Midnight Express.
Oh, Bobby Eaton.
Bobby. He's breaking up every time you say his name.
I see Bobby.
Somebody doesn't Bobby want me to Bobby. Say Bobby Eaton. So Bobby Eaton was a massive star from, I want to say, about 82 through 90, beginning of 93. And that
his
was,
downfall, he didn't talk. That
was his problem.
That's what messed him up.
That's
man.
His problem. Yeah, he didn't talk. But,
yeah, and they didn't give him a proper singles run.
Yeah.
That's true. He had one decent... Well,
he was TV champ, wasn't he?
He was television champion. Yeah, he beat Arn TV Anderson. He beat Arn Anderson was? For the title.
He beat Arn Anderson, right. But then Anderson beat him back.
Right.
Because he lost to then Anderson lost to the Great Muta.
Right. No.
Right.
No. This was after the Great Muta.
Oh, this is after the Great Muta. I apologize.
This
okay.
is after the Great Muta. No, actually, I'm gonna tell you. I think it wasn't Anderson that beat him for the TV title. I think it was Steve Austin that beat him for the television title. I have to go back and take a look at that. But Bobby,
I think it was Steve.
But when Bobby Stan Lane left. And so that kind of left Bobby in the lurch.
With them.
Yeah, so that left Bobby in the lurch. And one of Bobby's first singles matches was on a Clash of the Champions for the world title against Ric Flair. I think they had a 2 out of 3 falls match.
That was a good match.
That was a good match. Then the television title match happened at the very first Super Brawl against Arn Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
And
damn, mullet was all over the place.
Impeccable. And Bobby, of course, came out on top. He was the television champion for, I don't know, maybe 2 months. And then Stone Cold or Stunning Steve Austin took the title from him after that. But like Phil said, Bobby never had a singles run because after the whole thing where he was television champion kind of died away, they didn't use Bobby for the remainder of the year, really. 92 rolls around and he was thrown into the Dangerous Alliance, that only lasted 8 months. Dangerous Alliance ended, and Bobby's left forming a tag team that was haphazardly put together. Bobby Eaton and Chris Benoit, and they tagged for the first half of 1993, and that was it for Bobby's run for the most part. Okay, you could say he had a little resurgence in the Blue Bloods, but...
That was funny as hell.
Yeah,
that name made sense. Sir Robert Eaton.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I love it.
But Bobby should have had a better singles run because Bobby didn't say a lick, okay? He didn't talk. I think in 20 years of wrestling, I've heard Bobby talk 3 times.
Yeah, and Tony C touched on it before. Like, you know, if he had a mouthpiece, like if Heyman would have stayed and managed him, it would have been a nice story for him for a nice run. If Cornette would have stayed after Stan left and stuck with him, he just needed a mouthpiece. A lot of guys can work, just couldn't talk. It's a problem
Regal
today,
did all
too.
The talk.
Yeah.
And Regal did all the talk.
He had 2 great mouthpieces. He had Jim Cornette and Paul Heyman. You couldn't get any better than that.
Of course. And then, of course, when he was with the in the Dangerous Alliance, okay, he had Heyman. Everybody in that group could talk except for Bobby.
It's true. You had Zabisco, you had Austin, you had Rude. All those Medusa. All those, they can all talk.
Yeah.
You know.
And
Bobby just sitting there.
Bobby with his thumb up his ass.
You know what's ironic too? That him and Arn Anderson were like the best of friends, and they wound up putting Anderson with Zabisco.
Yeah, you know? I don't get that. I know that when the Dangerous Alliance fizzled out, Bobby and Arn tagged a little bit at the end, but
briefly. But they would have made a great tag team.
They made Zabisco and Arn tag team champions.
Yes, they did.
They did. The Enforcers. Yep.
They did. But that was that whole thing though at the end with Bobby and Arn with Michael P.S. Hayes as their manager. It didn't make sense.
Nah, they should have kept them like away from Hayes and see. Just this is all fantasy warfare booking that me and Choppy should be doing in the next couple of months because you know, every time we have this conversation, it's like the coulda, shoulda, woulda. Right. If you would have kept this guy with this guy, or if you would have kept this manager with this guy, or this girl. Or
kept these like, two people apart, the hell correct, away from each other.
Correct, absolutely. You start thinking about the runs they had during this time. Like, again, you just had, you know, Bobby Eaton had a terrible singles run. He had one good singles run, and it was brief. It was super brief.
Yeah.
So he, you know, could have, should have, would have. But, they just didn't. They just were afraid. For some reason, a lot of guys get lost in the shuffle when there's too many guys that are top caliber guys. You can only do so much with the, you know, with guys that are the upper echelon. You know, you're only pushing five or six guys. The other 10, 12 guys that are upper echelon are either mid carders or tag teams or whatever. You know, that's how it was in NWA and WCW for a while.
Bobby,
so.
And Bobby, if you're listening to this program, and I don't know if you are or not, but Jim Cornette told a story about you the other day that should give you a reason why you need to open your mouth and start talking. Jim Cornette told a story the other day on his podcast that when the Midnight Express and him went to renegotiate their contracts with WCW in 1989, Jim Herd said, "Jim, I'm going to give you this, but Stan and Bobby, I'm not giving them what they want, and I'm going to give them a $100,000 pay cut."
Man.
Oh, hell no.
So, you know, that's why Stan left. Bobby took the pay cut. But, you know, I don't know. But, yeah, Bobby would have been a huge star in this industry had he not been forgotten and put to the side. Because look, even when Bobby had that brief singles run, Bobby was in a main event position with a main event faction for the better part of 1992. We fast forward to 1993, and he's in a tag team with Chris Benoit, and they're in the opening matches of WCW Pro and WCW Worldwide Wrestling.
You know, you stick with the Midnight Express for a second, and you want to talk about guys who got forgotten. Dennis Condrey, the original Midnight Express. That dude can work with anybody. Didn't look the part. He looked like a friggin' a bartender in Mississippi somewhere. With, you know, but he looked like he belonged in a Marlboro commercial. But, I mean, he left because of money, and Stan Lane stepped in shit. You know, not for nothing. Dennis Condrey was amazing. They were tag team champions.
Yep. Yes, they were.
You know what I'm saying? And it was so weird. You know, again, like a lot of guys, you know, a little younger than me, like you guys, or a lot younger than me, don't even know that Stan Lane was a replacement. Dennis Condrey was super forgotten. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't want to throw a monkey wrench in whatever list you have.
No, no, I don't have a list. I'm going based off those first three that I put in the picture, and then we can freestyle from here. But no, I agree with you.
Dennis Condrey
really
was a
touch on them.
Dennis Condrey was so good, man. And if you go back and watch some of these old WCW, I mean NWA Saturday Nights on the network, they cover him a ton, like 84, 85. I tell you, man, the Midnight Express, one of my favorite teams of all time. Either with Dennis or Stan, with Bobby and Cornette, just pure genius, man.
A lot of people, that's their favorite tag team.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
Yeah. Jim Ross, I had this conversation with Lee a long time ago.
Jim Ross says, yeah,
it's funny, Tony C brings that up because I was at, my wife and I went to a Broadway show the other night. And it was based on Donna Summer, right? And the dude who wrote all her music was the dude who wrote the Midnight Express song.
Giorgio,
whatever the hell his name is, right? So now I'm shuffling through the songs on the phone on the way home in the car, and of course I have that, and I'm like, hey, he did this too. And my wife's like, what is that? And I'm like, So it's from the movie, but that's my boys. And he's like, I heard that before. You must have played this a million times. I'm like, yeah. He was that dude who wrote that song for them. And I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent.
No,
but
go ahead. ahead.
He was way ahead of his time.
Oh yeah.
He started using
porn.
Yeah. Yeah, he started using like synthesizers in the disco beats and shit, like right in the mid to late 70s. And when he scored this when he scored with Donna Summer, he started doing movies and producing music for movies. That song is so recognizable. Whether you're in the disco hall back in the day or you're a wrestling fan, you, when you hear that, you know it's the Express, you know?
Yeah.
So
now this is not the original one. This is the second one that they use, but this is, you know, this is essentially like a remix, for lack of better terms. But, you know, that was a great theme song, probably one of the best ones.
It's a mix of porn and Oriental music.
And it's a great movie, too. It's about a college kid who smuggles hash. Trying to smuggle hash out of Turkey, and he gets locked up for like a, you know, it's based on a true story. It's a really good movie. But yeah, that's the song, man. When he escapes, so good.
But
my question
would be to you or Double A, what requires you to be a forgotten wrestler or star?
See, I didn't know. That's a good question, because I was gonna ask Double A this before I even. You know,
I gave you three good examples. I gave you Terry Taylor, who had a quasi decent push, but ultimately pushed to the side.
Because there were so many guys in the territories that were just superstars where they were. Like you read about these guys in the books every month, but they were never in, you know, WCW or NWA or WWF. They were superstars.
Or they could have been a star somewhere else. Then
correct.
They got to the E.
Right.
Like the Eric Embrys of the world, or the Iceman King Parsons of the world. Like, all those guys were amazing talents. But you never heard of them unless you read the Yap the Mags.
I talked about Bobby Eaton, talked about Brett Armstrong. Another one that... You know, because I started thinking in my head different names. And Tommy Rich came to my head only because Tommy's run in Georgia, because Tommy beat Harley Race for the NWA title, and he was the champion for 2 weeks, whatever, however long it was, made him, you know, famous in the world over. But Tommy left Georgia, went to Memphis, had a colossal run with Austin Idol against Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee.
And Bill Dundee, yeah.
And they had a scaffold match where the legend is Paul Heyman wouldn't climb the scaffold, and Jerry Lawler got so pissed off at Paul Heyman that he slugged him and broke Heyman's jaw. That's a true story. But they had a massive feud in Memphis. So Tommy Rich, the thing is, Tommy had big success kind of wherever he went. So Tommy didn't qualify. So then I'm starting to think who would be another one. Big name, had a good run, but then was forgotten. And he was forgotten because of his behavior. He squandered away his potential. Nature Boy, Buddy Landell.
Yeah, Buddy Landell had Buddy Landell had Lex Flugeritis.
Yeah,
he did. He had a terrible attitude.
Yes,
but he didn't look as good as Luga. Did not look as good as Luga.
And he basically pissed away, you know. I remember I heard the story that when Buddy was fired from Jim Crockett Promotions, they were just in the beginning stages of setting up what was to be a big feud between him and Ric Flair.
He could work.
And Buddy could work. If you've ever seen any of Buddy Landell's matches, they were good matches. And he was a good promo. He wasn't phenomenal, but he was a decent promo. That's an example of a forgotten star. Even though that he's responsible for his own failures, that's an example of a forgotten star.
You know, you brought up Boston Idol before. What about Adrian Street? Adrian Street was the modern day Gorgeous George.
Yes,
Adrian
he was.
Street was the reason why Adonis got away with doing the gimmick, because Adrian Street didn't go anywhere but Mid South or where.
Yeah,
you know,
I thought
and
about
when I interviewed him. I'm sorry, Double A.
No, go ahead.
When I interviewed him a couple of years ago, I brought up Austin Idol because his feud with Austin Idol was almost as big as the Dundee Lawler thing. Uh-huh. It was huge in the 80s. Huge. He hated Austin Idol. When I brought up the name, the guy cringed. But he had the gimmick. He dressed up with the makeup and the hair, like the whole Twisted Sister looking thing. Like, D. Snyder with muscles, that guy. Right? But yeah. But if he went to Vince or he went to WCW with that gimmick, he would have been over. He didn't. And he just got forgot about. You know, guy's got 3 books. He wrote music. He does art. He's been in a couple of movies. He's very approachable on social media, but he didn't go anywhere. But maybe 3 territories besides England, because he wrestled in England for a bunch of years before he came to the States.
You brought up another Adrian, and that was Adrian Adonis. And Adrian Adonis, you know, his career was cut short because of a car accident. But Adrian Adonis.
He's underappreciated, too.
He's very underappreciated because Adrian was a great wrestler, despite, because you got to remember, there are 3 phases of Adrian Adonis. There's the Adrian
former
Adonis.
Former tag team champion.
There was the tag team champion Adrian Adonis that was with Jesse Ventura and Dick Slater.
Dick Murdoch, sorry.
Then there was the Adrian Adonis who was the 300-pound effeminate guy in the flower shop. And then there was the badass that went to the AWA after the whole flower shop gimmick ended, and he just was running roughshod. And then, of course, he had that car accident where there was like 3 or 4 wrestlers in the car, and I think he was the only one that died. But Adrian was a great, great wrestler. Adrian's problem, again, Adrian couldn't talk. Adrian was like Bobby. Adrian could talk a little bit. I'm not saying he could talk
about
at all.
That's debatable, though. If you watch this stuff in '84 with Murdoch, man.
I don't remember. I remember.
You gotta
him
go
talking,
watch.
But
go back and watch some of those TNTs on the network. There's a skit with him. He has to find Murdoch on Murdoch's ranch in Texas. Mm-hmm. It's the funniest shit you've seen in a long time. For '84, it was hilarious. He can talk. The problem with him was that he put on too much weight, and no one took him seriously after the gimmick with when he lost the Piper match at WrestleMania 3. You know, I think if he would have lived a little longer, maybe took care of himself, maybe he went to WCW after that.
He
I think his death was the only reason why he's forgotten.
Yeah,
that's it.
He's you know. That could also qualify. Early demise could qualify as a forgotten star, because you look at the term underrated is used a lot in wrestling, and because you say, well, this person is underrated and they, you know, they don't get utilized enough and this and that. But a lot of times when you have that conversation in the open, you're usually talking about somebody who is currently in the business. So there's still an opportunity and still a chance for that person to get their moment in the sun. Right now, a good example of that, and Mondo's in the chat room, or Mongo's in the chat room, and he says Curtis Axel would be a modern-day Bobby Eaton. Curtis, former Intercontinental Champion, was the Florida Heavyweight Champion, lost the title to Seth Rollins when Seth Rollins was on the rise. And that was kind of it for Curtis Axel. Of course, he had his run with the Nexus. He was a Paul Heyman guy for about 5 minutes. He did the whole thing with Ryback, and now he's with the Miztourage. But Curtis has never really had his chance to show what he's fully capable of. But that doesn't necessarily mean it could never happen, because he's still an active competitor. But if you talk about somebody like, I'm trying to think of another name, I'll give you another one. And he was a big star, but I don't think he was as big as he could have been. You brought up another. This is another member of the York Foundation, Michael Wall Street, Mike Rotundo, Irwin R. Scheister, whatever you want to call him. His biggest claim to fame was being IRS.
TV champ.
And he was the television champion. But how many people remember his television title run? How many people?
They don't.
How many people remember labeled, him defending the tag team titles at the first WrestleMania?
He got labeled as a tag team wrestler. A lot of guys, listen, a lot of guys too, and it's a great point. A lot of guys too get labeled. Like maybe Bobby Eaton was like the, well, he's only a tag team wrestler. He's a tag team wrestler. A lot of tag teams broke out stars. But a lot of tag teams didn't. A lot of tag teams remained the same. Like, they just remained a team. Like, there was no, you know, they didn't break a lot of guys up because they worked together. Like, it took almost 15 years for the Steiners to break up.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy to think that Scotty would turn. Me and Chobby just did the pay-per-view where he turned on Rick, right? I think it was Super Brawl, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Super Brawl. Right? So we did that, and me and Chobby, all we kept talking about after the show and before the show was, you couldn't believe that was going to happen, you know. And you couldn't. And the reason why Scotty wasn't labeled as a tag team wrestler was because of his affiliation with the NWO, and he can actually talk. There were certain guys that were just labeled as, like, Mike Rotundo is a phenomenal talent.
Yes, he is.
But he will forever be a tag team wrestler.
Right.
Period.
And like I said, he was with Ted DiBiase, you know, a man that...
Great wrestler.
Great wrestler. I think Ted did not get everything that he deserved. Ted had massive success, and I'm not saying he's not. He didn't. And Phil's going to talk about it tomorrow. He's going to talk about he main evented WrestleMania 4 with the Macho Man.
Yeah, we did fantasy booking a couple of weeks ago. What if they would have kept the title on Andre? And me and Choppy threw DiBiase's name right in there with Hogan.
Right.
He could have been a champion.
I think if DiBiase probably had a little bit of, if DiBiase didn't get into the whole $1 million champion thing, it'd be a different picture, and probably DiBiase would have been the WWF champion. Eventually, but then of course he got into the tag team division and was tag team champions with IRS. But as you said, Mike Rotunda, labeled as a tag team wrestler, but really his success is primarily being IRS. Nobody remembers his WrestleMania 1 match. Nobody remembers him as television champion. I'm sure a fraction of the audience remember him as Michael Wall Street or VK Wall Street in WCW.
VK Wall Street.
You know, because he just wasn't given an opportunity to show and be exhibited a little bit more for what he could do on his own. You talked about Scott Steiner. Scott Steiner, when he broke off on his own, I think they always knew that Scott Steiner was going to be the star of the tag team because in the early 90s, they were setting Scott up for a...
They gave him singles matches against Ric Flair.
Yeah, he was getting title matches.
And Rick Steiner was always a tag team wrestler too, even with when he was in Mid-South with Sting and Eddie Gilbert and all those guys.
Yep.
Rick Steiner was never a singles guy, and then they threw him in the Varsity Club, you know? So.
Well, he had that singles run when he fought Sting and had that damn dome and pencil.
Yeah.
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 But
nobody likes to talk about that. But
it
happened.
Give me another wrestler that you guys can think of that you would fall into this.
Underrated?
Underrated, but forgotten.
Or just forgotten? Well, I only had two. I mentioned Derek Emery before, and then you made me think of Adrian Street when you thought of Boston Idol. But the only another guy that I thought of before I wanted to call in today was the handsome half-breed Gino Hernandez.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who worked for Joe Blanchard, was tag team champions with Tully in Southwest. When Tully left to go to Georgia, to go to NWA, Gino went to Texas and wound up with Chris Adams and Von Erichs and all the Freebirds. This dude was in his mid-20s, was absolutely stunning to look at, had a physique. The girls loved him. He was like the original, like, I guess, Alberto Del Rio or Razor Ramon. You want to go that route with the Latin flair to it. But this dude was only in his mid-20s when he overdosed on cocaine.
Yeah.
Like, this dude would have been a main player for years. He was that kind of good, the handsome half-breed, Gino Hernandez. But he, again, early demise took that away from him, you know.
Tony C, do you have one that is popping up in your head that somebody that you maybe watched as a kid, you said, man, I really like this guy, and it just never... He had a little bit of a run, but then after that, it just kind of went away.
Somebody who had a run, who I thought was good, and it just never filled up.
It just never panned out.
Like, to main event status pan out.
It could be just a run, a good run.
My guy, y'all may laugh, but I think he's very, very, very much underrated and disrespected and forgot about. It's Rick DeMarta Martell, man.
Never laugh at that.
People don't bring him up enough. Especially as a bad guy, as a heel.
He was so good.
Oh my God.
He was so good.
Oh my God.
And everybody forgets he was a tag champion in the '70s. He was wrestling in like 72, 76. Him and Tony Garea were tag team champions. Mm-hmm. Then he goes to AWA, wins their belt.
Wins the world title.
And then they give it to Stan Hansen, who doesn't even stay. And after that, you would think, well, keep him around. Maybe he could do something with Larry Zbyszko or Colonel De Beers or Baron Von Raschke or whoever the top heel was at the time for Vern Gagne. All of a sudden, he's forgotten about till he shows up in WWF again as, guess what, a tag team wrestler. Twice over.
The Can-Am so now, Connection, I think, right?
That was Can-Am Connection and Strike Force.
Yeah. Strike Force.
Right?
Yeah.
So now...
And when he turned on Tito Santana...
That was it.
That was the first piece of heartbreak I felt kind of in my life.
He don't do podcasts. Me and Choppy wanted him on so bad last year. We talked to him on Twitter. He doesn't do podcasts.
I've been petitioning now for a couple of years. Anytime the Hall of Fame season rolls around, I always bring his name up.
He'll get in.
I want to see Rick as he is. Not, you know, I don't want an ancient Rick Martel to be inducted.
No,
you know,
and not for nothing. Tony C, he was TV champ, and if he didn't get hurt during that match against Booker T, he would have still been there.
But I totally understand that. The thing that really didn't fit, once he did the model thing, why they never gave him like main event push, like him as a world champion, that character as a world champion
would have been over.
What?
Absolutely. 100%, man. That is a fantastic.
That arrogant.
Yep.
And
we can do that. We should do a fantasy warfare with Rick Martel and make him the world champion. I would write him a story for 6 months against Gene Roberts, against Macho Man, a face Macho Man. Like, there were so many guys he could have fought at that time. Adonis. He could have fought Adonis.
But, as a naive young man, I didn't know what the hell arrogance was. I thought they really sold that stuff in the store.
Yeah, that's Mega Powers.
I didn't
guy.
Know
he
that
loves Rick Martel. Yeah,
but,
no, that's a great one, man.
But,
that's
but
a
now,
fantastic
what
one.
What the hell is arrogance? What? And he would be spraying it. I'm like,
in that pesticide container.
That's what I'm saying.
Genius.
But
like, yo, what the hell is arrogance? What about that at?
Here's the thing, and this is where he falls. He's a perfect example of the forgotten star. Take away the gimmick, and you could take away the gimmick of all the people that we mentioned before. You take away the gimmick from Rick Martel, and he was an excellent wrestler.
Babyface.
Not even the babyface thing. You just take away the gimmick and you put the person in the ring. He was a great hand in the ring. I think the record that Rick Martel held the record for the longest participation in the Royal Rumble match for like 10 years the record stood. He was in the 1991 Royal Rumble and was in the match for
over an hour.
And
he had the record. He had the record until Flair broke it.
And then he had a repeat performance in 92 that ran, I want to say, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 minutes, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yep.
And you can't just put a jobber in there and do that.
No.
And the fact that he sprayed air against some people's eyes, and then the next week they came out with like bandages around their eyes.
You know, Double A, you make up a really good point. How they brought a guy like him back to do that. They don't normally do that with just regular job guys. I think back then too, you guys may disagree with me, but I think a lot of guys, and I don't want to use the word underutilized, we use that word a lot, but there were guys that were taken for granted.
Oh yeah,
like they were always around. Like, oh yeah, throw so and so in a ring with him, he'll be old. Like, that's how I feel about Steven Regal. Like, oh, let Regal work with him. Like, they did it with Goldberg. They did it with a bunch of guys. Just throw Regal in there. He'll stretch him out. He'll be okay.
Regal is a great modern.
Yeah, it's almost like when in baseball, and I hate to make a baseball reference all the time, but, you know, I love baseball, but it's almost like that team that has that bench guy who's a bench guy for, like, 15 years on every other team. He just comes up and gets that base hit. You know what I'm saying?
The utility guy.
You know, he's that guy. Or that backup quarterback. You know, the backup quarterback?
Yeah.
That he comes in and all he does is win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about the name that Mongo just mentioned in a second. But you talked about...
Mongo in the chat room?
Mongo's in the chat room. You talked about Rick Martel, and you talked about his runs with his various tag team partners. Of course, he had a run with Tony Garea. Then there was the Can-Am connection. And then, of course, there was Strike Force. Let's not forget the other member of Strike Force. That's a person right there that's also great hand of the ring, was a big star at one point, and kind of just was put to the side and again, used when they needed him. Tito Santana.
Chico. Pretty Chico, what they call him.
He was a great hand in the ring. Of course, came in the 70s. Had the run with the Intercontinental title. Had the feud with Greg Valentine. And then lost...
The racist feud.
And then lost the Intercontinental title to the Macho Man. And... but after that, he had the two tag. He had the different tag teams. He had the run. He had one run after the IC title, and then the Strike Force run, and then of course he became El Matador. But he never really did anything as big as he did when he was the Intercontinental Champion, and he feuded with Greg Valentine. And I believe they main evented Madison Square Garden in a cage. That's 1984, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but that's somebody, big star, forgotten later on. Now he teaches Spanish somewhere, because he wants to teach Spanish. But
he's a teacher in Jersey, I think.
Yeah, but he wants to teach. You know, that's his thing.
No, he is.
Like that movie with Errol James almost in it.
Stand and Deliver?
Stand and Deliver. That's a great movie.
That's a great movie, dude.
Anyways.
Oh, man. Tito and Deliver.
Mongo brings up a good one, and I have to ponder this one. The Mountie.
I was thinking about him earlier.
Jacques Rougeau. He was big with the Rougeau brothers, and then, of course, part of the Quebecers and the Amazing French Canadians in WCW. His biggest claim to fame, though, was being the Intercontinental Champion. He beat Roddy Piper. He lost the title to Roddy Piper.
Beat Brett, didn't he?
I think he may have
beat Brett for the title in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Okay, you're right. And then he had the feud with the Big Boss Man where he went to jail.
In the garden. He took him to Central Booking.
He was a big star for that time, and then kind of just was, okay, when the Mountie gimmick ended, that was it. There was nothing left for Jacques Rougeau.
That song got him over.
That's
what everybody hated.
Yeah.
And that damn stun stick.
A lot of tag team wrestlers suffer from this. They have that singles run that is over. It's big, and then when it fizzles out, they don't even go back to tag teams after that. They kind of just
fall by the wayside.
They just fall by the wayside and are forgotten. I'm trying to think of another one because there's a lot of them, and it seems to be that a lot of them are in the WWE.
Crush. I would say Crush. That's what happened to Crush.
I don't know about
Crush. He was never at his peak as he was with Demolition. Then once he left Demolition, he tried to do the single thing and pretty much fell by the wayside.
You know what? I'm going to give you that, but with somebody else from that team. Barry Darso. He was Crusher Khrushchev, went to the WWE. He was the Mid-Atlantic champion in Jim Crockett Promotions, and then the Russians were the six-man tag team champions.
They were.
And then he left. He had a dispute with the company, and he went, became a part of Demolition. Then when the Demolition thing, fizzled out, he became the Repo Man.
Then he became Blacktop Bully.
And that didn't go anywhere. Yep.
Then he got fired
But Barry Darso is the reverse. He was a great tag team wrestler. Should have probably stayed in as a tag team. When he broke out on his own as a singles wrestler, nothing became of it. Because I don't remember the Repo Man ever having a run.
No. You don't have really. There's really not a criteria for the forgotten person because there's forgotten wrestler because there's so many intangibles.
Right.
Is he a tag team wrestler? Did he wrestle for one territory? Did he die suddenly? There's so many things to factor in. Was he mishandled, misused, underutilized? Again, I'll say the word. I don't want to use it though. See what I'm saying? If you only follow a certain criteria, you're not going to be able to dig the crates for a lot of guys and girls, I don't think.
Okay, I'll give you one that was a big star but wasn't used. Tom Zink, the Z-Man.
Mr. Minnesota.
I was about to mention him, but I didn't think he was.
Rest in peace.
Now he was in the WWF. Was a split second away from becoming the AWA World Champion, and then went to WCW, and I guess that's where people probably remember him most by, as being the Z-Man, and being the tag team partner for Flying Brian, and they were the U.S. Tag Team Champions. They beat the, I believe they beat the Freebirds for the title, and that was it. When the thing fizzled out with the Brian Pillman, because Brian became a singles wrestler. Well, actually, no. I take that back. First, Vader whooped his ass. Then
that's what I remember.
Then he had the U.S. Tag Team title run. When that ended, Pillman went out on his own, became the light heavyweight champion, and that was it for the Z-Man. And Z-Man hung around for a period of time after that.
G-Man always gonna have my respect because he wore pink tights and that damn Great American Bash 1990.
Woo! Listen, he was a perfect opponent for Van Vader, don't duh?
No, I agree.
No, I'm just saying he had to get in there.
Listen,
you know Vader was not.
Someone had to get fed to Vader. Someone had to get fed to Vader. It was his big debut. You know, I
kind of saw that match in person in 1998. I saw Kane wrestle Tom Brandy at a house show.
Salvatore Sincere.
And Kane beat the. This is a house show now. Kane beat the hell out of Tom Brandy, who ironically that night was wearing pink tights. And Tom Brandy will
now forever be known as doing the fake Patriot gimmick.
Yeah.
He's for the last couple of years. I don't know if he's still doing it, but he at one point he was touring the country as the Patriot, and Del Wilkes was like, "What are you nuts? That's my gimmick, man." So he was wearing the mask, and people thought it was him.
Shout out to Del Wilkes, who got one title shot, I think, in his whole career.
Shout out to Del Wilkes, yeah, absolutely.
Mongo's got a couple of names here. He mentioned Beefcake. Beefcake was over, way, way over. Owen,
oh, hell yeah.
Owen would have been world champion had he not died. I'm adamant about that.
That's a debate.
I think Owen would have been world champion.
I think people put dead wrestlers on big pedestals because they're dead.
No
disrespect to Owen. He was a phenomenal talent.
I'm going
to
tell you I'm going to tell you why I think so.
Whose spot he would have took in 1999?
I don't know. I'm not saying it would have happened in 99, but
you got to remember,
Owen died in May of 99. In November, Kurt Angle came in. Could you imagine the matches that Owen and Kurt Angle would have had?
Yeah, but you had so many guys there. You had Rock, you had Austin, you had Taker, you had Jericho,
Benoit came in. All these guys came in, and they were all world champions at one point or another.
Yeah, so I don't know, man.
Owen would have factored in at some point.
He probably would have been a main eventer. I don't know if he'd been a world champion.
The reason why it never happened before is because Brett was there. Now that Brett was gone,
he could have beat Brett.
Yeah, but
it made sense.
He did beat Brett in the cage.
I'm talking about for the title.
Yeah, he beat him at WrestleMania.
He beat him at WrestleMania.
But he would have, you know, with Brett gone and the rest of the Hart Foundation gone. Brett or Owen had an opportunity to shine on his own. That's where he had the run with the Nation, and then he split from the Nation and was the Blue Blazer and the Nugget,
Blackheart.
But then he had that tag team run with Jeff Jarrett, and Jeff remembers that run as tag team champions very fondly. And they were a great tag team. I'm not taking anything away from Jeff Jarrett, because as much as we can say what we want about Jeff Jarrett, Jarrett was a great hand in the ring, and when Jeff wanted to work, like, because I was never a huge fan of Jeff Jarrett, but Jeff Jarrett had some great matches with, I think, the people that he wanted to have great matches with. Okay, if Jeff was put in the ring with somebody that he didn't feel was up to snuff, probably Jeff didn't put 100% in the match. But his matches, his tag team matches with Owen Hart were great, and that's why they were tag team champions. But my point is, had Owen Hart became Intercontinental Champion, beat the Godfather, which he was supposed to do that night, had he done that, and then he would have passed through that Blue Blazer gimmick, it probably would have run the course of the summer. I think at some point, Austin got hurt in the fall of 99 at Survivor Series. Was taken out of the picture. Kurt Angle came in. I think
the Big Show came in.
No, wait. Kurt Angle came in in the fall of 99. I think had Kurt Angle still come in and Owen was a part of the picture, you got to remember, before the end of 2000, before the end of Kurt Angle's first calendar year, he was already the WWF champion. I strongly believe that if Owen was still around, Kurt probably would never have been the WWF champion in 2000. I'm not saying it would not have happened, but I don't think it would have happened in 2000. Because I would think that probably Owen would have come in and probably filled the void that was left by Austin in terms of a competitor that was needed. So he would have gone in there and had a feud with Triple H for the title. He would have feuded with The Rock. Who knows what would have happened?
It's definitely
Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle only feuded with The Rock for the title.
But no, but he was in the title picture for like 3 or 4 months prior to that.
At SummerSlam, yeah.
Definitely debatable.
So, you think Kurt...
I think Owen
would have won that King of the Ring.
Kurt Angle would have won. Kurt's push would have slowed down a little bit. Would not have been as fast as it was.
See, me, I think it made more sense for back in 94 for Owen to beat Brett at that Survivor Series instead of Bob Backlund.
I agree,
and that would have carried that whole feud to WrestleMania.
You could have fed Owen to Kevin Nash, Diesel, who beat Backlund in like 9 seconds in the Garden, I think, for the title.
Yep, and they could have did a regular feud.
Correct.
Or did a belt trade. Yeah.
Yep.
Like that.
So,
the ultimate goal would have been to get to that Owen and Brett match at what, WrestleMania 10.
Well, they did have the match at 10. But
that match should have been for the title.
You know what, Double A? I want to piggyback off what Tony C said. If they would have kept him if they would have made him champion then, that would have made it, that would have given him an opportunity to be champion again when, how you're booking him. You know, he could have made a run like, former world champion, Owen Hart, going at it again. Like, he could have fit right into 99 if he made, if he won the championship back in like 94.
Because
95, I'm sorry. I'm doing it with my memory, so it's I'm not.
You're okay.
But it's really profound how we as fans sometimes glorify these guys because of their passing. I'm not saying you're wrong or you're right. I'm just saying like it happens all the time.
Right.
And me and Tank used to have these conversations all the time. Tank was in agreement with you, Double A. Tank said Tank would have made Owen Hart world champion 3 times over. And I disagree with him because of how they booked him. You know,
Let me ask you this. Would you have an objection to instead of Brett and Shawn at WrestleMania, what, 11? No, WrestleMania 12. It would have been Owen and Shawn.
No.
That would have been great, too.
I think it would have been good, but I don't know if they could have pulled off what Brett and Shawn did.
Yeah, Brett was a couple of steps above Owen. And I say a couple because, people put Brett Hart on that pedestal.
I wasn't a big Brett Hart guy.
What made this feud special is that personal animosity, the real...
They had a real beef.
Yeah, I see that.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean that
from a 10 to an 11.
That doesn't mean that they could not have had their own feud at some point. Because
unfortunately,
you know, circumstances happen. Brett left the WWE, Shawn got hurt, and you know, Owen was kind of left on the lurch, no pun intended, but he was kind of just left there, and then Owen died in May of 99. But you know, Owen was 33 when he died. So Owen very easily, that was May of 99. We could have been talking about Owen Hart wrestling easily another 12, 13.
4 or 5 years.
No, even more than that. We'd be talking well into 2010, 11, 12 maybe. Because you got to look, Triple H is 50 years old, and he's going to be wrestling tomorrow at WrestleMania. I'm not saying that's right or wrong.
He's starting the show.
But wait a minute. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. But then you go to the other side of the card. AJ Styles, I think, is 42. And he's going to be, hopefully, cross my fingers, he's going to be the main event tomorrow night.
Man, Double A, let me tell you something. That ain't happening.
But my point is, AJ's at 42. Owen could have been wrestling at the top of his game at 42 as well. That's what I'm trying to say. And because there's a lot of the guys that the guys that are new and that are fresh on the scene in WWE are either pushing 40 or are over 40. They're not some 20 something that is, you know, like Randy Orton. I think of Randy Orton as an old guy already. Randy Orton is a year and a half older than me, and he's younger than AJ Styles.
Yeah, because he's been wrestling for 15 years.
He's been wrestling for 15 plus years. John Cena, I think, just turned 40. You know, but
he's on the back now.
But yeah, John Cena probably is. He's probably got about five more matches in
but
him.
But he didn't have some brutal injuries, though.
Oh, that's
what slowed him down.
Yeah, I think, again, though, just you know, I mean, there's a lot of times where we glorify guys who are no longer with us to the point where sometimes it gets misconstrued. Sometimes you have to go back and look at how he was booked.
So, Double A, you, instead of Mick Foley at WrestleMania 2000, you had Owen Hart in that match?
I probably would have had instead of the Big Show.
The Big Show before, he had just lost the title.
Well,
and you know what's cool about Owen too is that he was so like charismatic, and he can work his ass off. You know,
I'm just trying to think about which main event you would pull. Who would you pull from the main event and put Owen in there during?
See, that's
just the attitude there.
I think Owen and Triple H would have had a great run.
For the title.
I think eventually it would have been
instead of Foley, instead of what he did with Foley, you'd have put Owen there?
No, I'm not. They would have just had their own separate run. We're talking about placement in, you know, Mick Foley was right place, right time. Kurt Angle became champion just as Stone Cold was coming back. You can't say, you know, well, he's filling a gap because Stone Cold was back and then it really didn't matter.
Kurt Angle was better than they expected him to be.
Oh, that's true. But what I'm
they slept on him big time.
But I think Kurt and Owen would have had great
you
matches.
This, Double A.
Owen, let me go with this. Instead of Triple H, what's to say that Owen and Mick Foley couldn't have gotten into a program?
For the title?
Why not?
Yeah, because they fed Mick Foley to everybody. You know, Mick Foley wasn't a great talent in the ring. Let's be honest.
Well, 1999 was his year.
It was his year.
No, I'm talking about he wasn't no, you know, tactician in the ring.
Right.
No, I'm no, just no. saying you saying they fed him to a lot of people. 1999 was Mick Foley was in the title picture heavy.
Mm-hmm. But think about all the guys they threw him to get guys moving along the storylines. Kane, Triple H, Big Show,
The Rock.
Rock, Edge. Like they fed him to guys knowing that they were going to be bigger than what they were supposed to be at that time.
And then
especially Triple H.
And I'm going to fast forward a little bit further in time, Tony C. This is now, I just talked about how Owen probably would have had at least 10, 12 years in the tank. We fast forward from 1999, skip ahead to the year 2008, 2009, 2010, and who was the man at that time?
Edge.
Edge and Owen Hart would have had a series of matches that would have been great. They would have been classics.
Yep.
So I think that yes, Phil is right.
On,
we're putting a dead person on a pedestal, on, but go ahead.
I would have stuck on in that main event at Armageddon. I mean, it wasn't even the main event. That feud with the Big Show and Big Boss Man, he could have took that spot instead of Big Boss Man. I give you that one. So, Big Show and Owen Hart, feuding for the title. Yeah, I give you that.
It would have been, you know, if you're just looking for filler, because, you know, then Benoit came in, Guerrero came in, you know, you had RVD come in. All these people that were great hands in the ring, they were great technicians. He would have had great matches, Booker T. Who knows what would have happened? Could you imagine if Owen Hart and Booker T got into a program?
It would have been fantastic.
It would, yeah. And on top of that, they probably would have been hilarious promos.
That's cool.
If they would have had Owen around, Owen after they absorbed some Booker? Of those WCW guys, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
It would have been fantastic.
Yeah. Owen versus King Booker? The King of Hearts versus King
Owen
Booker?
Versus Big Papa Pump, you know?
Well, that one I don't know about.
Well, you're talking, he was the, but he was the guy, he was the, but see, Owen Hart was an antagonist. He would, like, he would have egged the big guy on, like, you know, you, sometimes you think out of the box, and that's how the Attitude Era got the, to the Attitude Era.
And I'm gonna give you one other feud. One other feud that they would have revisited had a few years had passed. Owen Hart's the heel, and he's going to go up against a babyface. That babyface being Stone Cold Steve Austin. Those two had a feud that Owen Hart, he went on Raw, says, I, you know, Hart 316 says, I just broke your neck.
And Owen 316.
Owen 316. They could have resurrected that feud 5 years into the future, or 3 years, however long into the future,
and made him champion.
That would have done huge business.
When Austin was feuded with Kurt Angle, I get what you're saying. Before that period, after Triple H got hurt, yeah, because they had him feuded with Benoit and Jericho, yeah, that would have made sense.
There you go, Jericho and Owen. There was a long list of people that Owen could have had great matches with. Unfortunately, he died, and, you know, we never got to see any of that. But at 33, Owen had easily 10 years ahead of him, and a lot could have been accomplished in those 10 years. In those 10 years, 8 of those years was spent with Shawn Michaels. Because Shawn Michaels came back, he rehabbed his injury, whatever he did. He came back and he started wrestling full time again, and wrestled from 2002 until 2010. Eight years. He got 8 years out of his wrestling career. Who knows what would have happened in those 8 years with Owen? Who knows? Maybe we would have seen John Cena versus Owen Hart.
That's definitely a fantasy booking episode. I'm telling you, we should definitely. Listen.
Would have buried them.
I think we owe it to these guys that are no longer with us to rebook them. Sure. I want to rebook him. I want to rebook Bruiser Brody. I want to rebook so many guys that meant so much to the craft at that time. Yeah, man. Like, there's so many guys you can book stuff like that with.
Other names that Hightower put Alex Wright and Hardcore Holly. First of all, Alex Wright, I think, just was lucky that he was noticed. Because I'm not taking anything away from Alex Wright. But I never saw Alex Wright to be the big deal that WCW made him out to be.
Well, they wanted him to be. He was the opposite of Kurt Angle. They had such high hopes for him, and he shit the bed.
Yeah.
Okay. Whereas Kurt Angle, they had high hopes for him, and he exceeded them. You know what I'm saying? Like, there were so many guys that WCW and WWE brought in that was supposed to be bigger than life, and they weren't.
Glacier, Jesus.
Yeah, but they, you know how much money
they invested all that money in Glacier?
They pumped all that money into that dude, and it was terrible.
I mean, someone Mortal Kombat every Monday.
Look at Giant Gonzalez. You remember when Elegante left and went to WWF? They put him in a furry suit, and they were like, let's put him with Undertaker. Let's put a 7-foot Argentine guy who can't walk in a furry suit.
By the way, props to Matt Squires. 3 days ago, he posted in the Turnbuckle Throwbacks group page the match of the century, Giant Gonzalez against Virgil.
Oh, so, man.
Anyways, Hightower. There's another person that Hightower mentioned, Hardcore Holly. You know what?
Just a good hand.
He's just a good hand. He got his main event spot, and he main evented a pay-per-view with Brock Lesnar.
And he paid for it.
And he paid for it. But
yeah,
Bob Holly
gained 20 pounds and cut his hair and still worked the same way.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, he did. And it was,
that's it.
But that was awkward, though, to have. You know, you're talking about the 2004 Royal Rumble. Here's Brock Lesnar, the WWE champion, and he's in the main event against Bob Holly. And I back then, I said, is this really happening?
Yep.
You know, because, you know, the storyline
was
that...
Didn't he win a tournament or something to get that title shot?
I don't remember how he got the titles. No. What happened was Lesnar dropped him on his head.
Oh, that's right.
And Holly was out of action for like 6 months.
He broke his neck or something.
Something like that. And when Holly came back, he was seeking revenge against Lesnar. And he got a WWE Championship match.
And oh, yeah, because that's when Brock was going on that ass-whooping tour at the end of 2003.
He didn't get that match at Judgment Day, Backlash, No Mercy. He got it at the Royal Rumble. And
Royal Rumble payday, baby.
I it's one of those things that's very out of place in wrestling. But
that's an obscure title match, Double A.
Exactly.
That can be categorized as an obscure title match.
There we go. That's our topic for next year's roundtable during WrestleMania weekend. Obscure title matches that are out of place. But
I love it. I love it.
But Bob was a great hand in the ring, and you know, I adored his run with Crash Holly. It was great. It was hilarious. And then, of course, he came to ECW, and he had that mini run with Rob Van Dam, and Rob Van Dam put him through that table, and the rubber elastic around the table sliced his back open. But
please don't try this at home.
Uh huh. but there's a lot of guys. I'm trying to think of another one compared to his run. Ron Simmons. Okay, that's a good one. Ron Simmons is a good one.
Wait a minute, Ron Simmons.
Ron
Simmons, the pinnacle.
He was the world heavyweight champion. He lost the title. And other than going to the WWE and being in the Nation and having the run with the APA.
Wait a minute.
Ron's career was not. You're talking about a man who was the world champion for 6 months.
Wait a minute. You're leaving out a key moment.
What?
He was Black Nito.
Yes, when he
you
was the
always
got to
bring that up.
I know. But.
And people try to. Erase that from his annals of time like it ain't never happened. Y'all remember them Ron Simmons coming out there, the black Magneto helmet on.
Oh, Farooq Asad.
Yeah. But
Ron, he hit Ed Johnson in the kidneys with a brick in his sonny purse.
But that's a great example of somebody who.
You fall from world champion to that. Okay.
Yeah, that's just somebody who got repackaged terribly. That's all. Like, he wasn't really forgotten. We all knew who he was.
You're right, Phil. I'm trying to think. Is there anybody, there's so many, but the names are starting to escape me now. Because I'm sure in the WWF there was a litany of people.
Magneto.
There was I'll give you another
one. I like
Go ahead.
I think we should do two topics next year. Obscure title matches, and Phil brought it up, and I agree. People, characters that got a big push and fell flat.
Yep.
Yeah, Mordecai.
Mordecai, oh my God. The Demon, Alex Wright.
Adam Bomb.
Yeah.
To an extent, Johnny B. Bad fell apart till he turned heel.
Yeah.
Like, he sucked as a face wrestler.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We're going to have a good time with
Abe Knuckleball Schwartz. Oh, well, that's
That's a round table by itself.
Right.
another name that...
We're going to name Glacier the guest of honor to that damn party.
The last name that I think we're going to talk about here, because we're going to wrap it up, I think, because it's already 6:45, and I want to let everybody have time to go, and if they're going to go watch NXT TakeOver... they have a kickoff that's going to air at 7:30 on the network. And that is somebody who was a big deal in ECW. He had a quasi-decent push in the WWE and had a humorous run. I thought it was humorous. A humorous feud, I should say, in WCW. And he had everything and all the possibilities in the world to be a huge star in this business.
Lance Storm?
Nope.
Oh.
Chris Candido.
That falls under the category of taken way too soon.
He was taken way too soon. He cleaned up his act, but then, you know, the effects of his transgressions caught up with him.
Yeah, and, truth and, be told, and, TNA was going to make him the world champion.
And I would have bought into it.
Yeah. He was groomed. He just signed with them. He was going to be their big deal.
Because I always talk about this match. I became a Chris Candido fan, not during his time in ECW, not during his time in the WWE as part of the Body Donnas. But Chris Candido became a household name in my books when he had that match with Terry Funk, and that horse kicked the shit out of Terry Funk. That's when I became a Chris Candido fan.
And then I'm a huge Chris Candido fan.
And then when I started doing the research on Chris Candido and things like that, I saw that he was a great hand in the ring. You know, not his fault that his choice in women is not exactly perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
well, they were high school sweethearts. She wasn't a complete mess when they were that young. You know what I'm saying? Like she wasn't a hot mess in high school. They were high school sweethearts, and she progressively became a hot mess in their relationship.
That's what happened with drugs and money.
Yeah, man.
Phil,
I think once a hot mess, always a hot mess.
I disagree, man. Yes. I disagree. I live in a city.
Phil
where
says she morphed into that hot mess.
She did. I grew up with people who became hot messes, man. I know. Progressive hot messes. I'm telling you, she wasn't a hot mess in high school. They were high school sweethearts. She became progressively a hot mess. You could hashtag that till the cows come home, man.
Progressive ham.
There's certain people you can watch her when she first of all she stepped in it, man. She wasn't supposed to become anything. This was old Jim Cornette booking her.
Yeah.
She was just hanging out with Candido and going to college. She basically was not really forced into the business, but she was so cute and adorable at that time. They were like, oh, yeah, why don't you hang out and do some stuff and blah, blah, blah. And that's became – and then all of a sudden, when she realized how hot she was, that became the hot mess. That became the hot
days
mess.
Ahead.
I don't know.
I never saw
the appeal in Sunny. I never did. But,
nah, she was cute. I mean, she wasn't gorgeous or anything like that. But I see where you. I get your point. She progressed. She wasn't that bad in high school. You know, and nobody's that bad in high school unless you know.
Oh,
I knew a couple.
Of,
I don't know.
I had a couple of girls that I grew up with that were moms by sophomore year of high school.
Oh,
you know,
same here. But okay. they cleaned up their act.
Yeah, listen.
So they're saying she was a whore all along.
Double A's on fire these last several days,
and then,
boys.
And then she's from Jersey on top of that, so...
That's terrible, yeah.
Once a whore, always a whore.
The armpit of America, yeah.
So...
Pulling to the bulk, man.
I mean, you saw that movie Clerks, okay?
Of course. The you suck 27 dicks.
Yeah. So, take it for 1 second, guys. Take it for 1 second.
There it is.
All I know is that I'm glad that you came into this today, Double A, without a criteria, because there's so many, like I said before a couple of minutes ago, there's so many intangibles, and there's so many ways you can go with that, like forgotten stuff. Like, they're forgotten stars in like the 40s. Like, I forgot about Boris Malenko until last night. I forgot about Sputnik Monroe until last night. Those guys were big. Those guys were household names back in like the 50s and 60s. So Stan Stasiak, I forgot about Stan Stasiak, but he was the first Canadian heavyweight champion. He had the heart punch. Totally forgot about Stan Stasiak until last night. Like,
another round table, whores or the rest of them.
Oh, we could go all day with that.
We call Ring Rat the Ring Rat Round Table.
Oh, yeah. The Triple R.
We never stop for material around here, okay?
No, that's the best about pro wrestling, man. You'll never run out of material in your lifetime. Never.
But anyways... This has been entertaining. Of course, this is a topic that, you know, if there was 50 of us in the conversation could easily go on for 20 hours. But we don't want that, you know, because, you know, some of us have lives. Some of us have things to do. Some of us are going to watch TakeOver. Some of us are going to watch ROH tonight.
Some of us are going to watch both. I just connected two TVs in the living room.
Yeah. some of us are going to watch neither. We've got people that are going to broadcast in about an hour. So it's a busy weekend, and of course things continue. Again, 1 hour's time from now, 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, Midnight Jury will be on. Mike Norenganger, he's going to talk all things WrestleMania, the best moments, the favorite moments. He's going to talk about the current stuff as well, maybe give some predictions. They may have a live report from the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Let me ask you a question, Double A. How does Smoothie King get an arena, and Tropical Smoothie is way bigger than them?
I think Tropicana in general, the orange juice, should sponsor an arena.
I'm waiting for the Dairy Queen arena.
Why don't we have a Sprite arena or a Dr. Pepper arena? Hey, that's a great name.
How about the 7-Eleven Center?
The 7-Eleven Center.
7-Eleven Center. That'd be always open.
Yeah. That would be great. I'm going to call the people at 7-Eleven Monday morning and see if they'll sponsor an arena in Miami. Anyways.
Send them a nasty email.
Send them a nasty email.
Send them a nasty gram.
I'll lodge a large complaint. But yeah, the fun continues. Of course, like I said, the Midnight Jury, 8 o'clock live. I don't know if the post show for the NXT show will happen. We'll throw that up in the air. But if it doesn't happen, don't worry. We're all going to be on the air tomorrow. We'll recap what's going on. The day starts with a rebroadcast of the Shining Wizards from Tuesday night. That's when they had Nikolai Volkoff, Carl Ouellette, and Ronnie Burke.
To Nikita?
No, they had Ronnie Burke and his guitar on. So we'll replay that 8 o'clock Sunday morning. That's tomorrow. Then at 11, the live programming starts, the Wrestling Call-In Show, live with William Morgan and a cast of characters that are slated to call in, from what I understand. Okay, so you don't want to miss it. 11 a.m. on the East Coast, 8 a.m. on the West Coast. So you can have your coffee and your pancakes, or you could just go to church with William Morgan, because, you know, it's Sunday after all, and some of you will be going to your services, so you can have that blaring in your family station wagon while you're on your way to your Sunday services. Then at 1:30 in the afternoon, Turnbuckle Throwbacks with Choppy and Phil Rea. They're going to be talking news, predictions, but most importantly, the 30th anniversary of WrestleMania 4. That's their throwback. Then at 4 o'clock, The Rant with myself, Tony C. Surfer, and who knows who else. We're going to give you all the news, all the predictions. We're going to give you all that stuff. A lot of big news that has happened since in the last 24 hours regarding WrestleMania.
Is Sylvester going to be there?
Is who? Is who going to be there?
Sylvester.
Sylvester? Oh, come on. As of, there's a lot of news in the last 24 hours that has happened. One story that I'm going to just tease everybody on. The story came out at midnight last night. Al Snow purchased Ohio Valley Wrestling. We're going to talk about that.
Yes.
And many other things. And then, of course, WrestleMania will happen. We're going to be back on the air at the conclusion of the evening with a post-show.
At 2 a.m.
At 2 a.m. Recapping everything that went down. And if you missed any part of the marathon, the entire marathon will rebroadcast on Monday beginning at 6 o'clock in the morning. And real briefly, before we leave you here, I'm just going to real briefly, for those of you that are sticking around, we're going to let me run down the cards real quick. I'm going to read them off. The cards for both TakeOver and the Supercard of Honor, which those are the two big events, which, by the way, those two cards are going head-to-head with that big cluster over in the Barclays Center, UFC 223. So this is a big night of competitive sports today. Let me see here. With TakeOver, real quickly, the matches are you're going to have Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa in an unsanctioned match. If Gargano wins, he'll be reinstated in NXT. If Ciampa wins, Gargano will be banned from NXT forever. You're going to have a ladder match to crown the first ever NXT North American champion. Adam Cole, EC3, Killian Dane, Lars Sullivan, Ricochet, and the Velveteen Dream. They're going to try to vie to become the first ever North American champion. Triple threat match and the finals for the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. For the NXT Tag Team titles, the Undisputed Era will defend their titles against the Authors of Pain and the team of Roderick Strong and the United Kingdom champion Pete Dunne. Ember Moon defends her NXT Women's Championship against Shayna Baszler. And of course, the main event, Andrade Cien Almas defends the NXT Championship against Aleister Black. That's NXT TakeOver New Orleans. That's 8 o'clock on the WWE Network. But if you don't want to watch that, Ring of Honor has their own card as well. And it's a biggie. So big that Cody Rhodes is getting a police escort courtesy of the Louisiana State Athletic Commission. That's no joke. Chucky T against Jonathan Gresham. The Briscoes will defend the tag team titles against Jay Lethal and Hiroshi Tanahashi. Kenny King defends the television championship against Silas Young. You're going to hear Last Man Standing match. Tomohiro Ishii against Punishment Martinez. You're going to get a ladder match for the ROH World Six-Man Tag Team Championship. The SoCal Uncensored, which is the team of Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky, they're defending their titles against Flip Gordon and the Young Bucks. Hangman Page versus Kota Ibushi. The tournament final to crown the first ever Woman of Honor champion. It's either going to be Klein or Itawani against Sakai and Tennille Dashwood. She used to be Emma. In the WWE. The world championship for Ring of Honor is on the line when Dalton Castle defends against Marty Scurll. And, of course, Cody Rhodes against Kenny Omega. And as I stated, Cody Rhodes will have a police escort to the ring courtesy of the new Louisiana State Athletic Commission. Oh.
Yep.
Big night.
That's why Phil has two TVs in his living room right now.
Big night of wrestling. So you get to pick and choose what it is you're going to watch. A lot of people are going to watch both events. A lot of people are going to be watching three events because they're interested to see what kind of nightmare that UFC event's going to end up being. And we're going to leave you with this bit of news. Dana White is going to be at WrestleMania tomorrow.
Yeah, as a guest of Ronda Rousey.
But there's reports that something else could happen. And we'll talk about those things tomorrow. I want to thank everybody who tuned in for this roundtable. It's always fun doing these roundtables.
I'm going to miss you, Brock.
Yeah. It's always fun to do these roundtables because we always have some great in-depth discussion. And, of course, when it happens during WrestleMania season, it makes it that much better. Stick around because coming up at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, or at the 8 o'clock hour, I should say, Midnight Jury, again, will be live. Mike Norenganger, he's going to be taking your calls. He's going to talk all things WrestleMania. And then, of course, tomorrow, the big show, Wrestling Call-In Show at 11, Turnbuckle Throwbacks 1:30, The Rant at 4, post-show after WrestleMania. For Phil, for Tony C, I'm Double A. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow for WrestleMania. Good night, everybody.
Later.